Ryan Murphy, let's talk about American Horror Story. It had some controversy this year, moving over to the movie miniseries category, and it certainly makes a lot of sense, because what we didn't know when that show began was that you had planned to wrap it up as such a self-contained story.
Right.
And it makes perfect sense that it would go there. But you competed at the Golden Globes as a drama series. And when I asked that question of John Solberg at FX, he said, aha, but Tom, the reason we did that, he said, this makes sense, he said, was we couldn't tell people that the storyline was going to wrap up at the end of one. This is a story about suspense and cliffhangers. And I thought that was a good answer to that question, but still there has been an inconsistency in where to put this show. And where do you come down on that?
Well, I think what John told you was completely correct, and it's something that we spoke about even when I was doing press and promotion for the show, which was don't give away the farm. I mean, John Landgraf also particularly felt that he did not want Connie or Dylan or Jessica or myself, all the actors, of course, had for one-year deals. And people in the press sort of sniffed that up and wrote about that. You know, they knew something was amiss. But he didn't want to tell the audience all these people are dying. He was worried that people would not be invested in the series and it would take away a lot of the fun of the experience to know, okay, well, why should I be investing in this if everybody's going to croak? And I completely got that and respected it. So I think he was right in that. But I will say about, is it a drama? Is it a miniseries? I always felt that it was a miniseries, and I'll tell you why, because when I pitched the show, it was always pitched as a sort of a new kind of anthological series, in that every year there was going to be a story that was a beginning, a middle, and an end. There was a completely new setting, a new location, new cast. Some of the actors are playing new characters, of course, but it's a completely new story every season, and we'll be that way till, you know, we no longer do the show. And so in that way, I really felt it was a miniseries, and of course I pitched it that way, and that's, I think, why John liked it, because it was a sort of new way to do a story that had not been told. I was also following this sort of fun idea of the Orson Welles Mercury Theater Troupe, where you take a huge chunk of actors that you love and admire, and every year you have them play completely new people. So I think if you look at the definition of what a miniseries is by the Academy's own definition, it makes sense. And that's, you know, if you look at Prime Suspect, you know, every year they had a different crime. They at least had Helen Mirren playing the same character over and over. We don't have that. Jessica Lange, for example, will be playing a completely new person.
Yeah,
so I was very satisfied with how that all worked out. I thought it was correct.
Mm-hmm. And you've said publicly that her character in season two will be, you know, the opposite of what of this villainous character she was in season one, too, that you deliberately wanted to take it in another direction.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I pitched the show last year and we got into production, you know, halfway through the first season, you know, I had already thought of the second season, so I went to a couple of the actors and I said, you know, you're sworn to confidence because John Landgraf doesn't want this to get out yet, but this is what we're doing next season. Would you be interested in playing a completely new character in a completely new time? And I didn't really give them any more information than that, and they all said, yes, we love that idea. That's exciting to us as actors. So, and then, of course, this season we're adding new people like James Cromwell, and that's very exciting. But I think that all of the actors, Jessica in particular, really love this idea because I think she did not want to do, and I'm speaking for her, of course, but from what she told me, you know, she's always doing movies, and she did not want to do a dramatic sort of series where you're locked into the sort of same story, the same character, 5, 6, 7 years. That's just not where her head was at.
Mm-hmm.
So she was very interested in this idea. I hope she does a third season. I don't know that we've even talked about that or committed to it, but she's read the first couple scripts of the new season and really, really likes them, in fact, loves them, because I think they're the opposite of what Constance was last year, and that for her and, you know, the other actors, I think is very exciting to come in and play something completely different than what you did.
Why is it in season one that when Constance goes to the house next door, and we know that these ghosts can kill people, the one woman kills the one guy in the basement, of course, after sex.
Yeah.
And certainly Constance knows that, but she's not afraid. And there are two theories that could you could take away as a viewer from that. One is that she's simply so evil herself that the ghosts are like, hey, she's the one of us, baby, or I'm not messing with her. She scares me, even me. Or two, just that she just doesn't care. She's just fearless of death. Yeah, but why is it that she walks so freely among them?
Well, Jessica and I spoke about that, and I think that you're right in all of your assumptions. I think that she was always the badass character of that series, and I think that that season, and I think that she really was fearless, and I think because she lost everything, her children, her husband, I think she had no more fear, and I think she was afraid of nothing. I even think that in a weird way, she probably welcomed death. But Jessica and I talked about the tradition of that character, and she was always a sort of weird, warped mixture of Blanche DuBois and Mrs. Danvers. And Jessica loved that. I mean, she thought that was hilarious, and she, I think, I don't know. I just always thought that Constance was, and I think, you know, from the first episode, she is the character that really broke out that people were obsessed with because she was so fearless and she was so funny about it. I think she's just a woman who had faced such tragedy that nothing scared her anymore. And she was like, ghosts, death, villains, bring it on. Like, I just think she was,
And I know you don't have an answer to this question, but I have to ask it anyway.
Okay.
And that is at the very, very, very end of the story.
Uh-huh.
When she's faced with that demonic child who's just murdered somebody, you can imagine two reactions on her part. One is absolute delight that she's got the spawn of Satan that this evil character herself always wanted, or utter terror herself is that she may have finally met her match and be done in. And the fact that you don't resolve that is really great.
Yeah, I love that. I think a lot of people, when they saw that, you know, John was also, Langer was also very, very clear with me that the second the show ended, he wanted he and I to talk to a lot of press people and say, okay, now that you enjoyed the first season, here's what we've been plotting, and which we did. But I think we did it the next day or maybe the day after. But I think some fans saw that scene and thought, oh, the second season is going to be Constance with the baby. It's going to be the omen. And I think Jessica, and we talked about that scene, played it really well because I think she, for a split second, was terrified that the baby was, she knew, I think, that it kind of was the Antichrist and could kill her. But I think in a split second, she segued into, well, wait a minute, maybe this is how I'm going to get to sleep at the White House. You know, I think she went straight to this child's going to be somebody, and that's always what she had wanted as a failed movie star, you know. So, I loved how she played it. I thought how she did it was absolutely right, and we spent a lot of time actually trying to cast that baby, that young child that looked like
Tate.
Yeah, what would, and I do think the fun of that is we'll never go back to that story. We'll never say never, but I have no plan to go back to it. But in my mind, I always imagined that just like The Omen, which I loved, I think that child would go on to sort of great universal manipulation and some high-powered job where his satanic instincts would be used, and she would ascend. She would sort of be much like Angela Lansbury in The Manchurian Candidate. I always thought that was what Constance was set up, was born to do. I think Constance probably would be running the White House in, like, you know, 34 years or whatever. So and it was just really fun, and Jessica was always up for it. She just loved that character, and she, you know, she was sad. That was, I think, her last scene, and I think I talked to her a month later, and she says, oh, I miss Constance. She missed her because it was so fun for her to play.
Oh, sure. The two endings you have, because the other ending back at the house with Connie Britton and Dylan McDermott and the rest of it is such a perfect way to wrap all that up, that you have good ghosts there chasing people out of the house that might ever stop the tragedy from continuing on.
Right.
Was utterly brilliant, and I was an absolute Mooney for this show.
Thank you.
I'm happy to admit. And what as a journalist and as a writer myself, I was dying to ask you, did you work backward from those two moments to the season, or did you just find them as a storyteller's little nuggets of gold along the way and went, God, that's the perfect way to end it?
Well, Brad and I always knew that that was the end of the Connie and Dylan story, and I think when, you know, we never told the actors completely what it was, but I did when I met with Connie, who I hired first. I said, you were just in the best marriage in the world on Friday Night Lights. Don't you want to be in the worst one? Want to be the most fun? And she loved that. And she read the first couple scripts, and she said, it's really, really dark. And I said, it really is, but just wait, because the darkness will inform everything, and that couple, who is so dysfunctional, will get the happy ending that they deserve. And once she heard that, she's like, okay, I trust you. And Dylan and Connie, I think, both loved that scene, as did I, because I was new, and Brad knew that that was where it was headed. I think that they would find happiness in death. Like, I love the idea that they got their dream in a weird, to be quite blunt, really fucked up way. And I think that they became the uber rulers of that house. You know, I think you finally got a happy ghost in there. The others were doomed to sort of move around in their sadness. But I really think that that'll be, for all time, I always thought that Dylan and Connie and Thaisa, who played Violet, their daughter, would finally be the happy family that they always wanted to be. They had their baby that would never grow old. So I did always have that. The Jessica thing was, we actually had two endings. We were going to, at one point, have the baby kill her. But I grew to love that character so much after like four scripts. I was like, I will never kill this character ever. This character will live on for all eternity. Like, I grew to love her so much. And I thought that she also, you know, after the tragedy of all those children and killing the husband and the darkness and the fear and the pain and the economic stress, I just like that she... It's a very also weird personal story for me, that thing, because I always felt that my parents, who had me very, very young, and they would, by their own admission, you know, they weren't the best of parents, but they were kick-ass grandparents. They learned how to love and do all that stuff and be great for the grandchildren. And I always thought, well, that's what Constance should do. She should have the perfect experience of really being a maternal figure with this grandbaby. Of course, the grandbaby ends up being the child of Satan, but otherwise. So that was also a personal choice. I understood it. And Jessica was also very, very protective of Constance. And she used to say, I don't want to see a death scene. I don't want to hear that coming. So she was very, I think correctly so, intimated that Constance, of all of those people, was just a survivor. There was nothing that was ever going to stop her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it was also like a very moving thing for us, and we talked about it a lot, of like, what would happen to Blanche DuBois when she got out of the insane asylum? What would she have done? Would she have become a victim, or would she have become a hardened survivor? And that's one of my favorite characters in all of, you know, literatures and plays and movies. And I had seen Jessica. I saw her do it twice. So we always were talking about, what would Blanche have become? And I think there was a lot of Constance in that as well.
Fascinating. Now, several of the actors, including Zach Quinto, have told us that, and Dennis O'Hare and others have said that you didn't let these stars know along the way what was going on. I mean, Violet, for example, didn't even know she was dead, right, while she was shooting those scenes early on. And then
she did not.
And then you were giving the pages to them kind of late breaking. On one hand, I think you were writing them late, but also there may have been some strategic thought in that. Let's just have them live in the moment as these scenes are happening and not have this foreknowledge themselves. Was that planned, or were you just so up against it with scheduling that you had to do some quick writing there at the end?
Well, I don't think that it was really, I mean, the interesting thing about the show is I'll start at the beginning. I mean, we shot that pilot, you know, at the end of May in June, and the day that John saw my first cut was, I don't know, I want to say the second or third week of June, and he said, let's go. And I said, I really want to go too, and there was talk of holding it till the winter or the summer, and I said, no, I really, really feel I want this to go in the fall. It's a Halloween sort of feeling. I'll move heaven and earth. So we had to build and staff in a matter of, you know, weeks, and there wasn't a lot of prep time on that first miniseries season. But the thing, I never like to withhold really a lot from actors unless I think it's interesting, and I think it will help them. There are a lot of people on that show that I told, okay, this is what's going to happen. I'm not going to be specific with you. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want Thaisa or Evan really to know that she was dead until that episode And I think that we were correct with that because her performance was so raw and emotional and brilliant. I thought she did such a great job. I didn't want the episodes before that to be infused with, well, wait a minute, I'm already dead, so what am I doing? I wanted her to be really into it and play the love story. And I think looking back, both she and Evan were glad that they didn't know too much too soon. That was the only story that I really tried to protect the actors from, what the twist of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else, there were some things that happened to Zach. There were definitely some things that happened to Larry, but it was the same thing. I guess I just really felt that I wanted the actors to be really playing the truth of what was in that script. Now, this that was an experiment, and maybe it was the wrong decision. It was the decision I chose at the time. This year, for example, I thought, well, let's do something else, because in talking to the actors, nobody complained. Everybody loved the material, and I think it turned out so well. This season, we started almost 9 months earlier than we had the last. We started writing in January. We start shooting the second season of the miniseries in July. And by the time we start shooting, I will have finished with the writers the first six scripts. So by the time we start shooting, all of the actors, all of the regulars will have that material to sort of plot and move back and forth. I love actors and I love all their processes. And, you know, some of them want that, some of them don't. Some of them have said to me, I only want to read what we're shooting. I don't want to know what's coming up. So I said, okay, well, they're here if you want them. I think it just depends on what the story is. And that was a decision I made at the time. And also the reason I did it is because we were only shooting episode 4, I think, by the time we started airing. And at that point, you know, with the world of TV spoilers, a lot of things were getting out and people were writing about stuff that we hadn't even shot. So I sort of wanted to protect the secrets of the series a little bit.
When I heard about this series coming on and taking on this traditional format of the haunted house, and I was like, what the F is this? Jesus, couldn't he have thought of something more clever than this? How would you do with it? And then how you take it and you twist it to dark place. And I went, okay, I get it. You know, I'll swallow my criticism there.
Now, yeah, that was an interesting thing last year. You know, it was a really interesting experience that I had not been through before, because we shot the pilot and I obviously, with Brad, we had pitched out the whole season to John Landgraf. He knew exactly where it was going. Not everything, but he really knew where it ended. He knew that the family died. So we did the first pilot and we showed it to critics, and there were so many people, I think, who were like, what the fuck is this? Like it was very sort of a weird reaction for me, and a lot of people did not like it at the beginning, particularly that first episode. But once, like yourself, once they saw all the episodes and they were like, oh, this is what that was about, I think that the tenor changed a little bit for the show, and I was glad. You know, a perfect example is my friend who I love, Michael Osceola, who I think is great. He did not like the first episode, and I was like, just stick with it. Please just stick with it, and he did. And by the end of it, he's like, okay, I love it. I get it. I'm on board. And I think for me that was sort of a really common thing. And I think if people would have known at the beginning, okay, we're not going to follow this house and the occupants for 5 years, you know, I wonder, would they have been a little different? Would it have been a different it's interesting. I mean, it was such a thing that we had cloaked in a little bit of secrecy, you know, purposefully so. I think maybe this year people will know, like, okay, every year there's a beginning, middle, and end. There's a story. It's going to be wrapped up. Have patience. Don't be throwing stuff at the screen, wondering how they can sustain this for 6 years.
Oh, come on. It's fun rushing to conclusions like that.
but
first year. Now, are you taking in season 2 another kind of traditional story set up for horror, And then giving it your own twist, or are you creating a completely new universe?
It's a new universe. It is a sort of very true, you know, all I'm going to say about it, it's a new universe. It is a traditional trope of horror. You know, I've already said that it's in a mental institution. And, of course, there will be many, many weird and unexpected twists. Because my thing that I like to do is to say, particularly with all of my work, I'm like, I love paying I'm just somebody who's like, I have this obsession, I have this obsession, I have this obsession. How can I get all these obsessions sometimes into one piece of work or one season, you know, particularly in the horror world? Like, I have a lot of influences and things that I've always loved, and I'm like a kid in a candy store with the genre. I love it. I love working on it every day. I dream about it. I go through books. I pull pictures. The staff is really close on that show. So I think that people will be in for a lot of surprises when they watch that first episode again and be like, holy fuck, what am I watching? And then all that stuff is peeled off as the series, the year rather, progresses. So I'm excited about that. And of course, you know, everything is wrapped up at the end. I know exactly the writer, you know, we've been working on it. We know the last scene. We know how it ends. We are already talking about, okay, what's the third season? What is the horror institution we're going to tackle? What is the story? So it's really fun.
Are you careful about plot inconsistencies? I'm one of those viewers who's trying to catch you at the lapses of logic in the world that you set up. For example, in season one where Tate says to his girlfriend, just close your eyes, say go away, and they can't hurt you, they can't. And then, of course, a few episodes later, one of the ghosts is killing a real person. It's like, maybe the real person is getting killed because he didn't close his eyes and say go away.
That's exactly right.
I mean, so you have that out, but I'm saying, but you could also interpret that Tate was saying that the ghost can't hurt you. But
yeah.
There were little places online, message boards and all that, trying to catch you in these inconsistencies. And Dennis O'Hare mentioned a couple to me last week that he thought he had caught. But this time it sounds like you have more time with getting this thing up and going. Do you pay careful attention to that?
Well, you know, I think it's funny because to me, that first season of American Horror is like, I understand why Matt, who I love with Mad Men, Matt Weiner, like, just goes crazy when people are writing, like, they didn't make that kind of pin in 1964. Like, and it's like, what? Like, my feeling about that is, okay, first of all, we're talking about ghosts. We're talking, but ghosts don't exist. And I mean, I think maybe they kind of do, actually, and I've had haunting visions and things like that. But sort of the world, the supernatural world, is it makes its own rules. Like, you know, if some, like, I've seen some ghost movies where they walk through windows and doors, and some others where you have to open up the door to let them in, and the same with vampires. I think it's all very subjective, and I think I love it, actually, when people are invested enough in a story to go back and say to me, but remember in the third episode where Tate said X? And I'm like, no, I don't. Like, I think the fans at a certain point own the show and take over that idea, and they're so passionate. And I certainly think there's always room for improvement in there. And I will say this season, by the time we start shooting, you know, we have six scripts and we have gone over them and over them, and really, because that's the fun of it. That's the joy of a horror story, is the logic and the rules, you know?
Oh, yeah. And
it's funny.
I'd missed early on where you had set up the rule in season one where on Halloween that the ghosts are allowed to leave the house. The dead
yeah.
people are allowed.
The only day they could walk free.
I was so upset when I saw them romping on the beach and was, this is, they're not allowed to leave now. This is bullshit. And I was, you know.
And then you went back and caught it?
Then I was fuming on the message boards at Gold Derby about this, and 15 people went by, you dead dumbass O'Neill. They said that in such and such an episode. Why weren't you paying attention? And I was properly chastised.
Oh my God, I got to send you these episodes early this year.
To see if I can clear the. I'm always on the lookout for that. Switching over to Glee now for season four. You know, I guess that everybody wants to know that what will the focus be on, the graduating class or the remaining students and the faculty? What have you decided?
Well, we're just now, you know, working on it, and I've always sort of known what it's going to be. But I think the thing that I don't want to say too much about it, but I mean, because it's so early, but I think that people will find it very, I think that it's an exciting thing that we're doing. I think that we're working on the first couple of scripts now, and I think how we're dealing with New York, where Rachel went off to at the end, and how we're dealing with Ohio with the new kids coming up, and how we're moving back and forth in the decisions of who is going to New York and who is staying and which long-standing couples are breaking up and starting anew. And it feels very fresh to me and exciting, and I love the new additions we're writing for Kate Hudson, who's amazing, and Sarah Jessica Parker, who I love. That feels very exciting, and I think fans of the show will love it, and I think I'm really glad we did it, because I like the show. To me, has always been about following a group of kids who are underdogs as they get their dreams. So I want to know how many of them who left the school are getting their dreams. Have their dreams changed? In some cases, they have. But for the most part, I think people will find it really good. I'm happy with it. I feel like it's reinvigorated the show and the form, you know, because I think we needed to do something, because after three seasons of a lot of those choir room scenes with 18 people, it became a bit much. I also think one of the things that I wanted to do this year is cut down on the number of characters that we had. I think that show grew into sort of a gargantuan.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I went into the choir room, and I think there were 18 people in there, and I was like, okay, we got to sort of streamline the storytelling a little bit here. So we have been working on that, which is very much what we did in the first season. I think if the people remember, we really followed like three or four of them, and the other people were just flavors and ingredients that sort of complemented those stories. So we're kind of getting back to that, which I like.
When I had posted in our message boards that I would be talking with you and invited questions from our site users, 42 comments were posted within the next 3 hours, and two-thirds of them all had to do with the same thing. This conspiratorial notion that there is a gay bias on the show. That here, for example, is a poster named Caroline who said, "How does Ryan feel about the fact that Finn and Rachel have kissed more in one episode than Kurt and Blaine have in an entire course of their year-long relationship?" Now, that same question has about 15 different manifestations and different questions. Is that a fair observation?
First of all, I have a couple of things to say about that. The thing about that is this. I think there are a group of fans that are very, very interested in the Brittany Santana romance and the Kurt Blaine romance. I would guess you'll call them our gay fans. Mm-hmm. And they have become among the most passionate commenters and shippers and the thing I have to say about that is I really do understand it. I really do understand the passion for it. I really understand how important it is for so many young people to turn on a show and say, oh, I'm like that character. I am like that. I wish I had the freedom to have that bravery. I mean, when I was growing up, I didn't have that. And I've talked about that before. I mean, I was growing up gay, and I had, you know, Rock Hudson and Paul Lynde, and that was Charles Nelson Reilly. And that was about it. That, and I only knew about Rock Hudson because my grandmother kept telling me he was a poofter. So I get it. First of all, I get it. I appreciate it. I really, I commend the passion. The thing about that is I feel with that sort of group of fans, I feel like you really, at a certain point, and we do talk about it in the writer's room, you really can't win. I feel like, this is a network show that is on at 8 o'clock, which is a family hour. And I feel like there's no other show on television that has done more for gay characters and more for gay storylines than Glee. I really believe that. And I've really fought hard for it. And I have a network and a studio that doesn't bat an eye and says, great. I feel like a lot of the lesbian fans want Brittany and Santana to have a full-on nude makeout session sometimes. I feel like they feel the same way about Kurt and Blaine. I think that they also feel sometimes that we have not handled those characters exactly like they want. And to that I say, you know what, you're probably right. I think there are some things in the last two seasons maybe we could have done a little more artfully and a little bit more carefully and a little more respectfully is the wrong word, but I sort of do get the criticisms. And, you know, look, you're doing a show. It's very sort of a lot of things happen. You try and do your best. Sometimes that doesn't work out.
That said, you're also trying to take on another gay storyline, The Normal Heart. Where does that project stand?
That's a really exciting project. I mean, it's always been a passion project of mine. I really believe in that story. I paid for it out of my own pocket. I love Larry Kramer. We're working on the shooting draft of the script right now. We have an amazing cast so far. We have Jim Parsons, who played that part on Broadway. We have Mark Ruffalo. We have Julia Roberts. We have Alec Baldwin. We just have a great group of actors that we're slowly building on every week. I'm sort of talking to a lot of different actors now about different parts, so I'm really excited about it. That'll probably start pre-production later this year. A lot of it depends on, Mark and Julia's schedules, as well as mine, because I have these TV shows. But I love the material, and I think it's a really amazing story that I'm excited to tell.
At what point did Streisand exit? As she had the rights for a long time, right?
She did have the rights for a long time. My involvement just came because I read the play, and I had always loved the play, and I called Larry Kramer up out of the blue one day, and I said, "What's going on with this?" And he said, "Nothing."
Mm-hmm.
That was his perspective. I don't know that it was Barbara's.
I know the whole story, yeah.
You know it. So, I mean, it's an interesting thing, because she is an idol of mine. I love her. I respect her. The first movie I saw was Funny Girl at the Age of 3, so I was doomed.
that's a poison to you right there, kiddo.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I respect her, and I know she tried so hard, and she had a script, and she had a story, and I know.
I think I lost it. Okay, there you go.
My experience with Larry has been really great, and I think he's really excited about the script. We're sort of really adding a lot of stuff to it that's very bold, and I'm excited by it.
Yeah, great. The stories that leaked out about, because Larry is as headstrong as Streisand is in many ways. The two of them trying to reconcile that, a vision for the film, ends up, anyway, it turns out to be a great opportunity for you to do it.
Yeah, it did.